Okay. So to this point in the course, as far as topologies are concerned, most of what we've looked at has been a topology the same as or similar to something we would have covered in 481, something that works as just a general small ripple PWM converter. And then we've either added a couple components in the case of the active clamp flyback, or we've reduced the size of the inductor in the case of the synchronous buck, and something to kind of shoehorn this soft switching in and look at the behavior there. What we're gonna start looking at today is a class of topologies that I call AC link topologies, which are things that won't work at all if you start applying small ripple. They are fundamentally 100% ripple kind of converters. And the basic idea of these is that from my input to my output, if I'm having a DC to DC converter where I have a DC input voltage VG, DC output V, they're going to be structured in such a way that I take my input and I run it through a DC to AC inverter at high frequency, where the AC that I'm going to produce is at or near the switching frequency. So I've got DC coming in, AC going out. I'll take that AC and use some kind of passive network composed of inductors, capacitors, transformers to take what is now a completely AC, or may have some DC component that is immediately blocked on the first element of the passive network. I may have an AC voltage with a DC offset. My first element of this passive is a big DC blocking cap to get everything to AC. But I now have these elements, AC only. I'm looking at things with 100% ripple and zero DC that then manipulate the voltage conversion ratio, manipulate the impedance seen by this inverter. And I design those in a way to get the characteristics I want out of this overall converter. Look at a little bit more. And then at the output of this, I still have AC, and I'm going to run that through an AC to DC rectifier. Again, at high frequency. Nothing here is 60 hertz. We're talking hundreds of kilohertz, megahertz up at the switching frequency for both of these. Okay. And within this kind of framework, there are a ton of different topologies, depending on how I choose to implement each of these elements. So my inverter may be a full bridge, where I'd use four devices supplied from the DC voltage, and then have their outputs going to generate my AC. I can modulate this in a couple different ways, either producing an output that is plus and minus VG, or plus VG, zero, minus VG, but use that to generate my AC. I can use a half bridge supplied from the DC. And then, as I mentioned, a DC blocking cap. Half bridge would produce zero to VG. If I did that at 50% duty cycle, I've got this DC component of VG over two. So I can put in a really big cap here to drop VG over two across it. But that one won't have really any AC on it, and then have my passive network after. I can split that cap. Another implementation, the half bridge would look like this, where this is my return. really has the same functional effect as my current goes out, comes back, and splits between these two caps. So I still have a big cap in series. Main advantage of this over this is that these can also be my decoupling caps. They supplement my DC link capacitance. For my passive network, so these are both half bridge types. I may have nothing more than an inductor. And to some extent, the buck boost converter that we've looked at could be classified in this range. If I said a half bridge here, just a half bridge, just an inductor and a half bridge on the rectifier, I get that buck boost back. Generally, the inductor will be used if we're in soft switching converters, but not full resonant converters. And then there will be a class of different tanks where we're actually employing a resonance in the tank to help us out in generating a pure AC waveform. So we might have a series resonance. I have in series an inductor and capacitor, and they resonate at or near the switching frequency. We call a parallel resonance. Another common one is we call an LLC. And then for my rectifier, I could have similar things. I can again run a full bridge, half bridge, both on the rectifier. If I've got an active inverter where I've active switching from gate signals, I could implement my rectifier with passive switching devices, diodes or FETs or IGBTs for that matter. Not as common at high frequency. Or I can do things like integrate them in with here in the passive network. For any of these, I may add a transformer. Since I am now in this central part where I have the proposed AC only, can simply integrate a transformer to help with stepping up or stepping down voltage. I can integrate a rectifier into that transformer if my secondary, instead of being a single turn, is center tap. This is my secondary of that transformer. I do a center tap rectifier. This is a very limited subset of what I can do in each of these blocks. There are some of the most common implementations, though. There's plenty of more things people have looked at. But generally, these converters operate the same. But power is passed through a completely AC stage. Is a critical part of it. And like I said earlier, if I apply small ripple in here and it's completely AC, ripple goes away, everything's zero. This thing just doesn't work with normal 41 type analysis. Okay. So why might this type of converter be good? And I'm going to motivate that by looking at kind of the simplest of the class. I'm going to do this as kind of a thought experiment about if I want to, example, step down voltage from some input VG to some output V, and I'm thinking in the most simple possible terms, what's something that can step down voltage very efficiently, very simply, right? A transformer, right? Transformers, we can make 99.8% efficient. for a variety of power levels, and they do a great job of stepping up or down voltage by the turns ratio. So if I want to step down, I want a transformer in here. I'm going to label voltages and currents on the primary as VP and IP, IS and VS on the secondary. I'm going to use a 1 to N turns ratio. And I'm going to let this transformer do all the work for me. So if I want to step down from VG to V, I'm going to set the turns ratio equal to the voltage conversion ratio, and this transformer is going to do all the work. Okay. Now, obviously, we all know if I hook DC up to this transformer on both sides, first thing it's going to do is run away and saturate. I'm going to lose all coupling, and I'm just going to short out the primary. That's no good. So if I want to use this and let this do the work for me, I need to make sure the waveforms applied to it are AC. The simplest way to do that is I just flip my input and my output at the same time, just continuously do it. Okay. So regularly with some switching period, I'll connect VG and V out positive, and I'll switch it and connect them both negative, back positive, negative. Doing that and keeping it AC, the transformer will step down the voltage, and I'll have a converter then. This will feasibly work. So if I put some kind of inverter and rectifier in here and have them kind of completely synchronized, only doing positive and negative connection, this transformer no longer saturate. This type of converter where I do something like that is called a DC transformer. I don't do anything more intelligent than just the minimum necessary to let a transformer do my conversion ratio. It approximates the behavior of our DC transformer that we used in 481 analysis, the mathematical construct of a transformer that doesn't saturate with DC. This is called a DC transformer, or sometimes DCX. So why might this be a good thing? So I want to look at a couple waveforms here. I'm going to plot voltages here. So my VP would look like this. We go from VG to minus VG. And my VS would be at some different level. I'm stepping down where it's plus and minus V, but if I let the transformer do all my work, V is equal to NVG. So this would be NVG minus NVG. And if I reflect that back through, it's just VP again, has to be, across this transformer. And if I look at currents, for example, look at IP. I'll assume that there is some current I out going to the output. And if my voltage V is constant, my power is constant, I have a constant current going out. So that current is going to get just chopped up, flipped back and forth. If I look at IS or IP, so IP, for example, would just be the same kind of waveform where value is N times I out. And if I looked at then, so my I out is more or less a constant current. We've got some I out. And I flip it, positive negative polarity here at IS. And that reflects through as N times that at the primary. And then if I look at IG, well, during this time, my inverter is connected in positive polarity, so my output current will be this color here. Then during this other interval, my inverter flips, so my input current is here. This is my IG. Okay. IG is just this DC current. My I out is this DC current. And here I want to talk for a minute about why this would be a good thing. So depending on how I implement the inverter and the rectifier, those have some switches in there. And in this case, the stresses on those switches are really the theoretical minimum for any type of converter. Okay. So the peak current on all these switches is the input current. And the peak voltage is the input voltage. Look at, you know, a buck converter, peak voltage on the switches is the input, peak current is the output. So it's stressed to the maximum voltage and maximum current. Here I've separated things. And I'm going to have switches at the input. They need to see at least input voltage and input current, right? I need to switch that somehow. Switches at the output need to see at least output voltage and output current. And that's exactly what they see here. So I have actually the theoretical minimum of stresses throughout this converter right now. There is no ripple. There is no indirect power. I only have exactly the voltages and currents necessary to convert from my input to my output. So here so far, let's see. Minimum stresses. And now I'm going to throw a wrench in the works. And I'm going to say, as we just looked at with the flyback, well, I've definitely got some leakage inductance on this transformer. Now a real physical component. And that's going to exist whether I want it to or not. I can make it small, but it's still going to be there. So if I look at VL, this voltage here. As I've sketched things, zero always. For all operation, I have 0 volts on that, which means that I never develop any current in it, which means that I actually don't get any power input or output. Crap, it was looking so good. What I need to do in order to accommodate that leakage inductance is I need to put voltage on it for a small time, ramp my current up, then go back to normal operation, then I'm gonna have to ramp it down. So it's gonna slow these edges. The way I'm gonna do that, I think I can fit this in down here, is I'm gonna insert a small time delay between when I switch the primary and when I switch the secondary. So the primary voltage is going to look the same. It's still my VP, but my VS will look like this. Now, if I look at the voltage on the inductor, let's give this interval here a name. This is C, my phase shift. Now, if I look at the voltage on the inductor, during that phase shift time, I'm going to have VG minus negative NVG reflected through. I'll divide by N, so I'm going to have VG minus VG. I'm going to have twice the input voltage applied across that inductor. Then here, my voltages will cancel out, zero. My voltage on the inductor will look like this. And if I go back and sketch my IP, which is the current in the inductor, it's going to look like ramping up, flat, ramping down, flat. Okay. So this is going to detract from my statement here. Basically, here, if I looked at, for example, the RMS of this IP waveform, it was exactly equal to this DC value, because that was always at one of two levels. Here, because I'm ramping somewhere in between, I'm going to have a little bit of, for example, if I sketched my input current IG average, so just the DC value of it, it would be a little bit lower due to these ramping intervals. I'd still be pretty close, but my stresses now would be slightly higher than this theoretical minimum. Okay. If I can design such that this phase shift interval is very small, then I approach back to this condition. I don't have any room to write that. Let's put it here. My design can minimize that phase shift interval. I can approach back to the point where I have minimum stresses. My voltage stresses are going to be fixed. I'll still only be stressing things to the input voltage at the input and the output voltage at the output. My current stresses will be slightly higher. What I mean by that is the IL RMS and the IRMS in my inverter become approximately just the input current, same thing at the output. So I have no additional RMS current beyond the minimum possible. It means I'm going to have kind of per element minimum possible conduction losses. Okay. So this thing's somewhat of a super converter. The other thing to note, and it'll take us a few slides to formally prove it, but if I look at when my switching actions happen, so I switch the primary, switch the secondary, primary, secondary. So primary switching actions are these two. Secondary switching actions are these two. If I look at the current in my tank, it's changing polarity for every switching action, right? That seems like a good thing. We have to analyze and figure out what the switching behavior is. But with all the ZVS converters we've looked at so far, one prerequisite was that I needed the inductor current to change polarity so that I could have ZVS everywhere, right? So at least initially, changes polarity means that ZVS for all devices may be possible. And we need to examine that further, figure out whether or not it actually is. So this thing seems like a super converter, right? I can have minimum possible conduction loss and ZVS of everything with really some switches and one main passive element. This is the best converter ever, right? Somebody should do a thesis on it. So the name of this one implementation here is the dual active bridge, where I use two full bridges and a transformer. The LL may be the leakage inductance of the transformer. It's a value that I like, or it may be supplemented with external series inductance to bring up the value, bring down the value. I need to make a new transformer. Not much way to subtract off from it. So good things about this, if I can operate with small phase shifts between the primary and secondary, I can have possibly minimum possible current stresses, and TBD, but it looks like I've got a good chance at ZVSing all eight of these devices. When I say minimum possible current stresses for a topology, it's not necessarily minimum conduction losses, because I have multiple devices. And this, the current at the primary will always be flowing through two devices in series. Current at the secondary will always be flowing through two devices in series. They'll have the minimum stresses, but have two in series. We're speaking broadly, theoretically, I could maybe find some way to do this with only one switch in series at both the primary and secondary. You still have the same kind of current stresses. Okay. So looking at analysis of this dual active bridge converter, I've got some drawings here, plots that are better than my hand drawing, showing these different operating waveforms. With the full bridge, the way I modulate it to get the kind of waveforms we drew is that I take device Q1 and Q4, and I send them the same switching signal, so they're always on at the same time. When I shut them off, turn on device Q2 and Q3, and with some small dead time in between, I go back and forth between that. Got these two on and these two on. Apply the voltage positive and negative. This type of modulation is known as, so G1 is equal to G4, G2 is equal to G3, where that's the gate signal, and I'm neglecting having to shift to get the isolated high side drive. This is just kind of logic level. This is called phase shift modulation. Where every individual device is on for half the period, off for half the period, neglecting dead time. There are other ways to operate this, basically. The inverter, I'm always applying either positive VG or negative VG. I could turn on these two devices at the same time, or the top two, and apply zero over to the tank. I get different sorts of behavior out of this. Modulation schemes using that state are typically have some advantages at low power. We'll initially look at the phase shift modulation, which is generally the best at high power. And the other thing, the waveforms that I'm showing here are for this V over VG is equal to N, our conversion ratio matched to the turns ratio. If that is not the case, this converter does have the ability to control the output voltage up and down. But what happens is it slightly hurts my waveforms. If I look at previous slide, reason that I had this nice flat inductor current right here is because I had zero voltage applied across the inductor, because when I reflect the output voltage, it's equal to the input. If that's not the case, my current here won't be flat, depending on whether the output is greater to or less than the reflected input. I'll ramp up or ramp down, and that's going to increase my current stresses for a given power level, for a given average current. Okay. Have something like color I haven't used yet. What kind of ramp up during this interval? Down during this one. If I had V less than NVG, and if I had it greater, my waveforms would look like this. So, still works, still can be highly efficient, but I'm going to be moving further away from this idea of minimum conduction, minimum current stresses. Okay. Yeah.
On that, what you just drew, can you explain why the purple is asymmetric and the yellow?
I'm not that great at drawing. They should both be zero centered.
Okay.
Point just that it's ramp up here, down, and then this segment should be a mirror of that one, the negative of it. And we've got an artist over here. It's fine. Oh. Okay. So, under this type of operation, I'm going to look at the behavior of this converter. The other thing that I plotted here is the time domain output current. And it looks like this, a plot of versus time, not just the average value. And really what it is it's just the inductor current I'd reflect through the transformer. And then I just rectify it according to which state the output's in. So when the output bridge is holding a negative voltage, I get the negative of the reflected inductor current. When it's positive, my waveform is just equal to inductor current times the turns ratio. Okay. So to analyze this, I'm going to look at the operation and I'm going to expand these waveforms a little bit to look at what's happening during the switching dead times of both the primary and the secondary. On the next slide, I've got some slightly expanded waveforms. And I've plotted for a case where VG much greater than V. And the reason I can see that is because in my primary side, I've got this switching interval. I haven't looked at it yet, but I'll tell you, you can get ZVS on all switching intervals under certain conditions. So I have this zero voltage switching resonance, and it's kind of slow. It takes a significant portion of the period, and that's because my primary is high voltage, low current. So I'm going to have a slower ZVS transition. I'm going to have lower current to charge a cap, a higher voltage. Okay. On my secondary, I've got a very short ZVS interval because on my secondary, I have high current, low voltage. So I'm just going to blast that capacitor right up. Depends somewhat on device design. My output capacitance of the output devices was huge. Maybe I get it back, but that's why it's drawn the way that it is. So I have these now 8 switching intervals per period, but there is some symmetry to the operation of this converter. And I can really just look at these first 4. The first half period. And everything in the second 4 subintervals is just anti-symmetric. Right? It's the same exact dynamics, but just with a negative sign on everything. Okay. And that's because the three waveforms that I plotted, the inductor current, primary voltage, and secondary voltage, are all in that AC portion of this AC link converter. If I look at anything on the DC portion, such as the output current, it's going to be regular symmetric rather than anti-symmetric. Okay. So the inductor current over this interval, the next half period, is same dynamics but negative. For the output current, for the input current, it's just the same thing. Happens twice in a row. There's no negative to it. Okay? But everything is either symmetric or anti-symmetric about that half period. So I'm going to begin with the first subinterval I'm going to look at is the switching of the primary side devices. And this is going to look familiar to you guys, I hope. So that is this dead time that I've drawn here. I have some negative inductor current, and my voltage VP is starting negative and going positive. I have current flowing in a direction that will tend to want to charge that VP. So when I shut off all four devices, what I'm going to have left in circuit is output capacitance of all four devices. I've got these two half bridges with something connected across them. When I simplify down these four capacitances, I get two in parallel, that in series, just like when you simplified the buck boost. So I get an effective capacitance here. I'll call CP, my primary side capacitance, where CP is CDS1 in parallel with CDS2, series with CDS3 parallel CDS4. If you'll excuse my shorthand notation. So here we can kind of have initial conditions. Here we know what the circuit's doing at the output. My output is just staying locked. My switches at the output bridge are on this whole time and it's locking it at a negative voltage. If I look at my equivalent circuit during subinterval one, it's going to look like CP minus V out. This is my primary switching subinterval. Subinterval one. Okay. After that, I go into this phase shift subinterval. My primary voltage VP ramps from negative VG up to positive VG, at which point I can switch my devices with zero voltage switching. Now I have VG here, done nothing with my secondary, minus V out, my phase shift interval. After that, I go into subinterval three here, which is where I switch the secondary. My simplification is really going to be the same for the secondary full bridge. I'm going to get CS, which is the equivalent of the series parallel combination of output side devices. And my input side is now stays locked. This is my secondary switching. And then my last subinterval, nothing happens on the primary. On the secondary, my voltage on CS resonates from minus V out, hopefully all the way up to plus V out. I can turn on the opposite two devices with zero voltage switching. And then through this interval is when I'm really delivering peak current through to the output voltage. This is my main power delivery. Sometimes this is a bit less of a formal name, but I'll kind of call this power delivery. This is the interval of these. This is the only one that existed in my ideal converter before I had that leakage inductance, when I said all stresses were minimum, because I was always in this subinterval. Didn't have to worry about phase shift or switching dead times. Okay. So, at least at a high level at the moment, it looks like it can be possible, based on polarities of currents and voltages, to obtain ZVS for everything. And these circuits, all four of these subintervals, are either linear subintervals, where I'm going to have a constant voltage applied across an inductor, or 1L, 1C, 1DC voltage source resonances that we can analyze on the state plane quite easily now. Okay. And reflect things through the transformer. The transformer doesn't change things in any way. So next thing we're going to do is plot the state plane for the dual active bridge. And we are going to do that on Monday. Okay. See everybody then. Enjoy your weekend.